If you didn't believe in miracles before Saturday, you better be believing right now. Thank God Almighty that we live in a country that still believes in the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the Alpha and the Omega. And our God still saves, He still delivers, and He still sets free. Because on Saturday, the devil came to Pennsylvania holding a rifle, but an American lion got back up on his feet and he roared! Oh yeah! He roared!
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I mean, what can I say? We just closed the show. I ended yesterday talking to you, the podcast a few days ago, I ended talking to you about God's hand and what's happening right now, and I just couldn't resist playing Senator Tim Scott. That's the best speech I've ever heard him give, by the way. That was incredible. And the thing that seems so ironic to me, I believe we have discussed on this mic the shenanigans on the platform committee, the shenanigans of Trump operatives, political operatives, acting maybe, I don't know if they act with his permission or not. Some of us don't think so. But trying to bully evangelicals at the platform into having kind of a watered-down pro-life platform, all of this stuff, and we've been very worried about this. And the thing that strikes me is that God is so present in that convention. They just can't, He just will not be denied. It just seems to me it's kind of like the rocks will cry out, and that's kind of what I see breaking out. I'm going to get into President Trump's introduction last night when he came. It's pretty amazing, too, another manifestation of God, I believe. You can see the theme, and it's kind of wonderful, to be honest with you. It's just kind of wonderful. And so we're going to talk today a lot about J.D. Vance because, truthfully, I haven't known much about J.D., and I'm catching up here. So we're going to talk to you, Bruce and I, about what we're finding out, and that will be the main focus today of our discussion. This is Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7, and you can call us at 662-821-2040, or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. You know, you can find us on social media. You can also listen to the podcast, and I hope that you will listen somewhere, either Spotify or Apple or afr.net. Those of you that are AFR listeners, I would caution you if you have an Android phone, you will have trouble listening on afr.net, at least on the app, the AFR app. It's a problem, and that's why sometimes I don't mention it. But afr.net, if you want to go directly to that, you'll be able to listen with ease. You can listen easily at sandyrios.com because that's the website, and we have it set up so that you can just punch on a button and you can listen right away. Well, we're going to talk today about J.D. Vance's position on abortion because that's pretty important given the fact that President Trump will not run for another term. We don't think that's possible, not likely. And J.D. Vance hit the position as vice president especially came into focus after the assassination attempt over the weekend. So whoever President Trump selected as vice president is in a very important role, a very, very important role. And his position on abortion, we will discuss today because that matters to me. It matters to those of you listening to me. It matters to people at the convention in a great way. And I think you're going to be encouraged. But speaking of that issue, the way we can get around, at least in our flesh, I think God's getting around it pretty well without us, but the way we can get around this in our flesh and fight to save babies, I think, is to donate to preborn. That's why I talk to you about them every single day that we talk on the podcast, because they do provide ultrasounds to moms who are confused, bypasses all the controversy on the pill, which is horrible. On the whatever abortion procedure might take place, if the mother's heart is changed, It's all taken care of. Planned Parenthood will go out of business if all these moms can see their babies in the womb. And that's why we are suggesting and asking that you go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right. Well, if you're not kind of, I don't know, encouraged, what a thought that we could actually be encouraged right now. If you're not encouraged now, well, stay tuned to this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
If you didn't believe in miracles before Saturday, you better be believing right now. Thank God Almighty that we live in a country that still believes in the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the Alpha and the Omega. And our God, still saves, he still delivers, and he still sets free. Because on Saturday, the devil came to Pennsylvania holding a rifle, but an American lion got back up on his feet and he roared! Oh yeah! He roared!
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I'm sorry. I just couldn't resist playing that again. That's just a classic for the ages. Senator Tim Scott, last night, now in real time, I'm talking to you on Tuesday morning, so you'll hear this at a different time perhaps. That was the first night of the convention, and that was Senator Scott speaking, and it's just thrilling. I mean, it's just, and I have to say, last night when President Trump came. He decided, he said actually in writing, he's not going to let the shooter stop him. He's still going to come. He was going to wait till Thursday, for heaven's sake. You know, he just was nearly assassinated. Just the emotional trauma of that. And the physical trauma, too. He fell, you know, he didn't fall down. He went down immediately. And I mean, just the, can you imagine just the emotional turmoil and the physical trauma, the stiffening of your body, the soreness and all of that. But no, he's not going to stay away. He came last night. And as he was entering the room, Lee Greenwood was on the stage just talking about President Trump, talking about the miracle, and setting up a live performance of his song, you know, God Bless the USA. And so the cameras are capturing President Trump as he walks through a tunnel to enter into the main area of the building that they're in, this huge building, beautiful building, by the way, in downtown Milwaukee. But here's the thing that struck me, and I'm just going to play the music for you, but I want to set it up so you can imagine. So here's President Trump walking in, and he's got Secret Service, like, lined up. I mean, he's really protected, but they're not out to the pavilion yet. And the camera focuses on his face. And I can tell you, having watched him for a long time, he's very expressive. We all know that. I've never seen his face look like what it looked like last night. It was soft. It was serene. It was thoughtful. It was peaceful. And as the music began to play, you could see tears welling up in his eyes. So let's listen. This is what it sounded like, even though you can't see it. Just imagine him walking through the tunnel and his face, as I described it, as Lee Greenwood is beginning to sing God Bless the USA.
Please welcome the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Thank you. start again. Just my children and my home. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. There ain't no doubt I love this land. Sing it! God bless the USA.
All right, so that's how it sounded. I mean, I honestly believe, and only time will tell, but I honestly believe that President Trump is a changed man. I honestly believe that. I don't know what that means, and only time will tell. And I'm speaking in spiritual terms. We know that the seed falls, and we're not sure about the soil. But it just seemed that God had just touched him in a special way. And I think, of course, one of the fruits of that is when he immediately, the first statement he made after the shooting was, God did this. God did this. God, only God. And we've never heard President Trump quite say it that way. He's always talking about his own strength. I did it. I got up. I haven't seen that. Haven't heard that. As he went back up in the stands, his son, Don Jr., also was tearing up. You know, can you imagine that family? They really love each other so much. And so that's how. And then Speaker Mike Johnson had a spot on the podium as well. And, of course, he is the besides President Trump, he is the leader of the Republican Party, leading the House, because the Senate, of course, is run by the Democrats. So he got up and said something also very interesting. This is clip 7.
What a time, right? What a time for the country. We have a new opportunity in front of us. I love the vice presidential pick, and we're off to the races.
It could have been so different, though. I mean, 2 days ago, I mean, it's shocking. I mean, it's like we came that close to having a very different evening.
We did. I was exchanging text messages with President Trump today, and I told him, I said, it's no small thing. Clearly, it was a miracle. It was a miracle. We, in one slight movement either direction, we have a very different story today, but I believe God saved him and preserved him. Ironically, you're a student of history as I am. That event happened just less than 50 miles of where George Washington, our first president, was also preserved from bullet fire. In the French and Indian War, the famous story where he rode through and everybody took shots at him. He took his coat off. He had bullet holes, 4 bullet holes through his vest. He recognized then that it was the hand of providence, he called it, that saved him for important things. And I think the same is true of Donald Trump. I told him that. We talked about it via text this morning, and he agrees.
Speaker Mike Johnson, I agree also, and it made me think, actually, I was tweeting, I'm busy tweeting, especially while we were driving back from Nashville on Saturday when this was taking place, I was tweeting like mad. And one of the things that did occur to me was how God, there are two presidents that I know of who escaped bullets in miraculous ways. The first was George Washington, as Speaker Johnson described, but it happened more often than that. In fact, the Indian chief who was involved in that conflict with George Washington said that George Washington was, the Indian chief, I wish I could think of the exact words, but the Great Spirit has his hand on this man. He's protected, like he cannot be hurt. And then Abraham Lincoln, same thing. Abraham Lincoln was not one to take, you know, to worry about himself. He was riding to the old soldier's home, as he used to do in the summer, because it was cooler out there, and they would leave the White House. And he was by himself on the horse, and someone tried to kill him, and it went right through his stovepipe hat, right through to the other side. He's notorious for trying to go out into the battlefields during the Civil War. And, of course, he's so big, his head stood up, and he just resisted being helped. And so there were many attempts on his life. And, of course, finally a bullet did find him. But I actually think that was God's providence, too. I'll just say my personal opinion, because I'm a Lincoln lover, I know I've studied him for so many years, is that the sorrow that he bore with the war and his family and the loss of his boys was too great. I think God just took him he needed rest, and I think God just took him home. That's my personal opinion, but, and, you know, how do I know the mind of God? Nevertheless, the point is this, that there were two presidents, great men, that served during pivotal times. George Washington, during the founding of our nation, when everything was so precarious, when we took on the Great Britain, for heaven's sake, the largest sea power in the world, the greatest force in the world, and this little fledgling country with barefoot soldiers with, you know, barely having their home rifles, we took that on. And George Washington was president then. He was an uncommon man, a very strong believer. And so there's that. And then there's President Lincoln, who the next crisis was the Civil War, with a country nearly, it did, split in half. And they were killing each other, hundreds of thousands of people being killed, and men. It was a horrible situation. And that man, Abraham Lincoln, bore that weight of that on his shoulders. And he's the one that God miraculously saved so many times. And Lincoln himself, during his time in office, became a serious believer in Christ. He knew a lot of scripture, but he didn't believe in established church. And so he was a certain skepticism about him, but that all changed. And you can read it for yourself at the statue in his second inaugural on the wall. It's just, it is beautiful. It's incredible. We both serve the same God, and yet we both pray to him. And yet one side would put men in bonds or something like that. It's a beautiful statement. I'm just telling you that I believe that President Trump is in that position. I believe our nation is on the verge of being destroyed. And I think most of you agree with that. And so the man that God is using is not like, you know, he's not a Sunday school man. He's not a person that would be in your church, someone that you'd feel comfortable with. God, but God is not so limited in his thinking as we are. God is using somebody way, way out of the box, but equipped to do this job. And I believe, and we'll see if I'm right, that God is working in his heart and mind. And I think he may be a very different man. I pray for that. I pray to that end, but that's what I saw last night. All right, so something else very big yesterday happened, and that is President Trump selected his vice presidential candidate. It's Senator J.D. Vance from Ohio, and I'm sure that many of you know that. You know that part. In fact, let me read President Trump's announcement. He announced it on Truth Social. After lengthy deliberation and thought, and considering the tremendous talents of many others, I have decided that the person best suited to assume the position of Vice President of the United States is Senator J.D. Vance of the great state of Ohio. J.D. honorably served our country in the Marine Corps, graduated from Ohio State University in 2 years, summa cum laude, and is a Yale Law School graduate, where he was editor of the Yale Law Journal, president of the Yale Law Veterans Association. J.D.'s book, Hillbilly Elegy, became a major bestseller and movie as it championed the hardworking men and women of our country. J.D. has had a very successful business career in technology and finance, and now, during the campaign, will be strongly focused on the people he fought so brilliantly for, the American workers and farmers in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Minnesota, and far beyond. All right, now I confess to you that before this morning, I knew only small things about J.D. Vance. I'd heard him speak, and I liked what he said, but I could not advocate for him or against him because I really didn't know who he was. And I don't claim that now I do know. I'm learning as you are learning. But I thought it would be a good thing for us, Bruce and I, to spend some time today helping you understand what we're learning about him so that you can make your own judgments. I came out of this little research bit this morning excited, to be honest with you, excited. And so let me walk down. He did an interview last night with Sean Hannity at the convention after he was nominated. And I thought, I just picked out a few of these clips because I thought it might give you some insight as it gave us insight. And so Sean asks him what it was like to be selected as the VP candidate. This is clip one.
What was it like? Because the last couple of days, well, it's down to two, you and Senator Rubio. What was that like for you?
You know, I just tried to enjoy the ride. What an honor to be considered. If it had been Senator Rubio, obviously Marco's a good guy. He's a good friend. So I try to just have a good attitude about it. You know, my family's very excited, obviously asking a lot of questions. I will say, Sean, I hope I'm not betraying too many confidences here, but when the president called me today to actually formally offer me to become, you know, the vice presidential nominee, which just sounds crazy, my 7-year-old son was sort of making noise in the background. You know, I'm getting so embarrassed. It's like, oh my God, Donald Trump's asking me to be his vice president.
So the phone rings, he calls you, and you're like, okay, this is the call, or maybe not the call.
Or maybe it's a bad call, right? It's the call. Who knows whether it's good or bad. But then he actually has me put my 7-year-old son on the phone. You think about this. Everything that's happened, the guy just got shot at a couple of days ago, and he takes the time to talk to my 7-year-old. It's a moment I'll never forget.
All right. What did he actually say?
You know, he just said, look, I think we've got to go save this country. I think you're the guy who can help me in the best way. You can help me govern. You can help me win. You can help me in some of these Midwestern states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and so forth. And he said, rightfully, that we have been very, very close for a long time, but especially since I endorsed you in 2022. And I would not have won that race without Donald Trump's endorsement. And the president's trust then and his partnership since then has been something I value a great deal.
All right. So then Sean asked him about people are jumping on the fact that, and see, I didn't even know this. I'm just telling you, I'm learning myself that he had really, really criticized President Trump a lot in 2016. He called him, I think he called him Hitler. He called him all kinds of things. And so he responded. Sean basically asked, well, what's going on with that? You know, what was going on with you? And this is clip two. Let's let him listen. Answer.
You didn't have the nicest things to say about him back in 2016, which seems like a long time ago now. You know, Pat, you literally said, you texted a friend, that Trump is a cynical a-hole like Nixon who wouldn't be that bad and might even prove useful, and that he's America's Hitler. And you compared him to a cultural heroine in the Atlantic Monthly. And I'll tell you Trump's response, but you said that then. What do you say to people that say, well, wait a minute.
Sure.
What did he mean?
Well, Sean, I don't hide from that. I was certainly skeptical of Donald Trump in 2016, but President Trump was a great president, and he changed my mind. I think he changed the minds of a lot of Americans because, again, he delivered that peace and prosperity. If you go back to what I thought in 2016, another thing that was going on, Sean, is I bought into the media's lies and distortions. I bought into this idea that somehow he was going to be so different, a terrible threat to democracy. It was a joke. Joe Biden is the one who's trying to throw his political opposition in jail. Joe Biden is the one who's trying to undermine American law and order. President Trump did a really good job. And I actually think it's a good thing when you see somebody, you were wrong about him, you ought to admit the mistake and admit that you were wrong.
Okay. So, you know what? And he probably represents so many people listening. I think of people in my own life who only know these sound bites. Only know these things that are attributed to Donald Trump, and really everything else is censored out. I used to say to Bruce, you know, he would do a speech, and that whatever goofy thing he might say or an aside, because he's just being honest, he's talking, he's riffing, you know, and trust me, if you pulled out all my riffs, I'd be in trouble. But that's what they do, they pull out that moment and take it out of context, and he seems like a fool. Where he has delivered an hour of content that's profound. So that's what they've been doing for the last several years, and that's what people think. I'm going to bring Bruce in because he's right here next to me. Hi, sweetheart. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Now, you've been reading about J.D. I guess one thing I'd like to ask you, I know you're not an expert either, but you've been reading about this. Tell us a little bit about his upbringing, and then I'm going to play a couple of more clips where he talks about it himself.
Well, I think he is what you would call a prototypical American success story. Now, I know a lot of people throw that around, and maybe it's true, maybe it's not in regard to that person, but I would say in regard to J.D. Vance, it is true. He had a very difficult childhood. His parents split. There was opioid addiction, heroin addiction in his family. He bounced back and forth between his mother and his grandmother, primarily raised by his grandmother, who he just gushes over the job she did. He was raised primarily in rural Kentucky, and he experienced the decline of what people call the Rust Belt, which we're very familiar with, having grown up in Illinois, the tough times for people where jobs were scarce and really people started to question, you know, is there a future for us, or have all the dreams of living in America gone away?
That was during the Obama administration. Yeah. I remember us driving through there, Bruce, from D.C. to Chicago, just sick at our stomachs to see the empty factories. Yeah.
And like us, many people in his family that were generations ahead of him were Democrats. They were FDR Democrats. After he, at his grandmother's urging, got himself together and went to school, he has a tremendous educational background, graduating from the Ohio State University and from Yale Law School.
Can we save that?
We sure can.
Hang on just a second. Yeah. Because I want to talk just for a second. Let him, this is his interview with Sean, and he talks about how hard it was growing up the way he did. This is clip 4.
Yeah, Sean, it was tough in a lot of ways, but blessed in a lot of ways. And I think you've got to sort of accept the good with the bad. I wouldn't see the world the same way that I see it without that experience. And I really do see it as a blessing. I mean, the grandmother who raised me was such an amazing person. I mean, she was a woman of deep Christian faith. She cursed like a sailor. I mean, she had a mouth that would really make a Marine Corps drill instructor blush. But she was so loving and so disciplined. And I really think that all the opportunities that I've had come directly from her. She also believed in this country and recognized that most people in Washington do not care about people like her. And when I talk about generations of grandparents raising generations of grandchildren, that's exactly who I think about, because I remember my mamaw, she couldn't afford her Medicaid payments. She couldn't afford the prescription drugs that she needed. She sometimes couldn't even afford food for both me and her. Those are the people who suffer when we have the policies that we've had over the last 3.5 years. And those are the people who stand to benefit the most from President Trump round two.
That's just stunning. You know, he talks about in another clip about how, they were hungry. His mother was hooked on meth, I guess. And he talks that that's why he's so interested in the opioid addiction, that he's got a passion about that. And, of course, in the Appalachia, it's a problem everywhere, but he knows firsthand about that. So that's some understanding that a man of his stature can accomplish what he does. Most of those people don't know anything about this. His past is just an uncommon past. And I want to also rush to say to all of you, if I could do one thing for each of you, I would break up the small world we find ourselves in. You know, I grew up in the church, and I'm glad I did. My parents became Christians, and that was a wonderful place to learn and be nurtured. But when I was a 21, my worldview was so small. I'm not talking about moral issues. I'm talking about making God too small. Like only God works through people like us in our church by whatever our church label is. There are certain hoops people have to jump through before you can actually think that God works through them. You know, I have learned, because God has just taken me out of that and thrown me all about, like imagine somebody in a rodeo riding a bull. That's how I feel like my life has been, hanging on to that hook that's on the saddle. But I have been shaken. All that stuff that was safe to me was shaken off, and I had to find out really God, really Him, really His real power. And I'm telling you that God works in ways that are so beyond our comprehension. And they don't take place just within the walls of what we are comfortable and used to. Like when he says his grandma was a Christian, that she cursed like a sailor. And I know a lot of you go, how could that be? She can't be a Christian. I'm here to tell you that a lot of Christians, so-called, don't ever say swear words, but their hearts are far from God. And there are some prostitutes in the street that are, their hearts are tender toward God. They are desperate and hopeless. Their lives are messed up, but God has more, can find more fertile ground in their humble hearts and torment than many of us who have grown up in the church. So I'm trying to shake the trees a little bit here to get you out of the box and see how really great and big God actually is. So, honey, let's go back now. How in the world, J.D., then he went to, how does this happen? I don't know if you got that far, but he, I know his book, and which I haven't read, and they have a movie, Hillbilly Elegy. I'd like to see both of those now, actually read and see. So he goes to Ohio State, right?
Right. So he goes and gets his undergraduate degree, and I think only 2 years from Ohio State.
And summa cum laude.
Yeah, and he ends up summa cum laude at the top of his class. Then he goes off to Yale Law School, and he writes for the editorial board of the law school, which means you're one of the top students at Yale. Then he comes out of there, and he really kind of goes in an interesting way. He goes into the venture capitalist type business. Imagine that. You grew up in rural Kentucky, poor as can be, and now you're rolling around with these. You can imagine the contacts he made coming out of Yale Law School with these financial people, and now he's rolling in the big world of finance.
You know what this reminds me, honey? You and I just watched that old movie about Sergeant York,
right?
With Gary Cooper, because how he became this incredible hero during World War II. But he was raised in the backwoods, overalls, you know, ridiculous, you know, funny accent. Ewan's got, you know, and it's all of this, and his whole life changed. And this is a little bit like that, isn't it? A little taste of that.
It really is. The fortuneness of watching that movie at the time we did, because we were in rural Tennessee. We were in Nashville for a conference, but then we actually went out to eastern Tennessee to go whitewater rafting, and we were up in the hills, and you could see, you know, there was a line in the movie. There was a salesman in the store, the general store in town, and he'd come from the east, and the people are talking with him, and he goes, "How did you all end up here?" And they said, "We was born here." And, you know, people will laugh at those kind of people, but you know what? Those are the backbone of America. Those people are the people that make this place go. The people that have roots in the land, that
know how to work hard,
and aren't afraid to take a chance. And if you look at J.D. Vance's life, that's what it's been. He didn't let his circumstances define him. He defined his circumstances.
So he goes to Yale. Do you know what the timeline is when he went into the Marines and he served in Iraq?
Well, I believe that happened after he got out of
Yale.
After he got out of Yale, he went and did 4 years with the Marine Corps. He was deployed to Iraq. He was a combat correspondent. And actually, and this would have been during the George W. Bush years, he actually had not a good impression of what we were doing in Iraq. And I have to agree with him, having been in Afghanistan, that if we go to these countries and try to country build, nation build, that will not probably happen. And we will pour dollar after dollar after dollar into that, and it won't matter. What you have to do, go there, get rid of the bad guys, set up bases, use that as a platform for us to defend ourselves and to defend the local people, and that's your job.
You know, let me just say about his view on foreign policy, because I'll just give you a little bit of it. I'm not an expert again, but I do know these things. He was completely against the disastrous Obama-Iran deal. There's a tweet from 2022 about how opposed he was to that. He wants Israel, these are his points, let Israel finish the job. Pressure Hamas, not Israel. Immediate release of all the hostages. Stop micromanaging Israel and empower them to finish Hamas. That is his position. He posted a picture of himself at the Wailing Wall, praying with a cap on. So Ukraine, he thinks that we need to end this. We need to get out. He believes what I've said to you, many of you, many times, that we are spending inordinate amounts of money propping up the people. It doesn't mean that the people there aren't good and there aren't some wonderful things happening there, but that we are, it's almost like Vietnam. It's a quagmire. So that's my words, not his. So he's for us getting out of there, and also for Israel, a fair policy in Israel.
And, you know, let me correct myself. Actually, J.D. who's only 39 years old,
he's
by the
39.
Way. He is a millennial.
He's a baby.
He is a millennial. He actually served in the Marine Corps before he went off to college.
Okay.
I wanted to clarify that.
All right. Okay. So that's a little bit. Now, that's just a touch of his foreign policy positions. But I want to just also now get into something that matters to all of us. So at the convention, we discussed in detail about how that went down, the platform committee. And it didn't go down well because the political operatives of President Trump really treated Christians and evangelicals badly. They made sure that some were not didn't even make it to the platform committee, that they didn't get reelected. They went to all the states and tried to undermine, because they were determined to have a platform that, in our words, watered down abortion and the stand on transgenderism and all of that. Now, the final product, I am telling you what their goal was, and I'm telling you that people in the room described how oppressive it was and how they wouldn't let the members have their phones, and yet they let the political operatives bring in their phones. It was a manipulated event. It was really, really pathetic and wrong on every level. But this, I want you to hear what J.D. Vance had to say about abortion, because this is how I feel about it. I just told you a few minutes ago that God is so much bigger. He's so much bigger than we can imagine. And I sort of sense that he's, like I talked to you about preborn doing an end run around laws and rules and regulations by showing the moms. I feel like God's kind of doing an end run around the nefarious characters who want to do that, because God was so present in that convention last night. So Sean Hannity asked J.D. what he felt on abortion, and he gave a long answer, and I think you should hear it. This is clip 5.
First of all, the Democrats have completely twisted my words. What I did say is that we sometimes in this society see babies as inconveniences, and I absolutely want us to change that. I do want us to be a more pro-life.
That's the word they focused on,
exactly.
Inconvenience.
But we do see babies as inconveniences, and that's a mistake, Sean, and I want to change that because I do care about protecting people. Now, here's the thing. Roe versus Wade is no more, and what Donald Trump has said very, very smartly is California's going to want to have a different policy from Ohio. Ohio's going to want to have a different policy from Alabama, and it is reasonable to let voters in states make those decisions. Doesn't mean we have to agree with it, but you have to have some respect for the political process. This is really important, Sean, that respect for the political process. Donald Trump is running against a Joe Biden president who wants taxpayer-funded abortions up until the moment of birth. President Trump is trying to identify some reasonable compromises so we can tone this thing down, find some reasonable pro-life policy, like, for example, make it easier to have babies, bringing down the price of homes so that you can raise a family in a house if you choose to have babies. These things are, I think, where the Republican Party is going and focused on. The Democrats want the most radical abortion policy funded by taxpayers. So the idea that they can run on this and attack us when President Trump is the one trying to identify some reasonable compromise, and they're the ones who want pro-life Christians to pay for abortions at 39 weeks, it's insane. I don't think any American buys it. Big difference, actually, between Democrats of now and 30 years ago. My mamma, the woman who raised me, was she was pro-choice. She used to say safe, legal, and rare. And I remember, that was her understanding of what the Democratic Party view was. The Republicans were pro-life. The Democrats were safe, legal, and rare. Now the Democrats are saying taxpayer-funded up until the moment of birth, unlimited. That's ridiculous. And for them to try to say that we're radicals on this, Sean, I don't think the American people buy it. My view is that Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party, and his views on abortion are going to be the views that dominate this party and drive this party forward. And his views are very simple, Sean. It's, look, you got to follow your heart. You have to believe in reasonable exceptions, because that's where the American people are, and you've got to let individual states make this decision. Alabama's going to make a different decision from California. That is a reasonable thing, and that's how I think we build some bridges and have some respect for one another.
All right. That was J.D. Vance's response to Sean Hannity. Bruce, what do you think about that? You had some comments to me earlier about that.
Well, I know we're never going to come to the perfect solution on abortion in this country, because many people would say no abortions at all. And others are going to be on the other extreme, abortions up to the moment of birth and after. And it's one of these issues that it rips our country apart. It's kind of like slavery. It is a sin in my mind. It's a sin we have to deal with, though. And right now, we need to gain power politically and to...
In order to say, not to exercise power, but to pull the country back.
Because the people that are in power right now are so off on what God's standard is for life. And we have to get in the door before we can do anything about it. And this policy that J.D. Vance and President Trump are advocating, I think it's one that we can live with at this time. It's a compromise. I know that a lot of people will not like that.
Well, I would say I'm all right with this. I know that that's going to be controversial. I'm all right with this for the reasons you just said. You cannot force people. You cannot pass a law that says no one can sleep with someone else's wife. You can't pass a law that says there could be no homosexuality or you will be killed. And we've had laws like that. You cannot legislate morality. That is a problem. I'm not saying don't have any rule laws about it at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just telling you that the moral issues that puts a lot of responsibility on us as believers in Christ and on pastors to start making the case and changing people's hearts and minds. That's how we're going to win that. And you notice that J.D. Innes' response, when he's talking about giving the states the right to make their own decisions, he said that doesn't mean we have to agree with them, because he doesn't. His history, his personal history, is completely anti-abortion.
Right, and I think you need to take his entire statement into account when you decide what he's getting at. And his statement about this is a mistake for people to think of babies as inconveniences.
Yes.
That's one of the biggest factors I think you have to change in people's minds if you're ever going to get them to become pro-life, is because this society pushes, you know, you have your babies when you want them because of your career.
And whatever gender you want.
Yeah. And that's not God's plan.
Yeah. I know. Okay, so the next thing, because this is important to those of us that are believers in Christ, is where he stands on the trans issue. And so he was able to respond to that question with Sean. Let's listen to clip 6.
I think that we shouldn't be teaching kids sexually explicit anything, whether it's LGBTQ or anything else. I want my kids to go and learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. And one of the important things that we can do as a country, Sean, is cut out the federal funding for radical curricula. A lot of the craziest stuff that you see in our schools, the craziest books and so forth, it comes from federal funding. And I think 90% of Democrats and Republicans, they just want their kids to get an education. They don't want them to be indoctrinated. They don't want fourth graders to read sexually explicit stuff. That's not a left-right issue. That's a common-sense parents' rights issue.
All right, so I want to read you, this is a comment from someone who's not his fan. Her name is Grace Panetta. Maybe I should know who she is. Maybe she's Leon's daughter. But she says in her tweet, J.D. Vance, Trump's VP pick, has long opposed abortion and LGBTQ+ rights. During his Senate campaign, he repeatedly castigated the childless left and specifically childless cat ladies.
Oh, boy.
So furries. He didn't call them furries. But anyway, that's who he really is, and that's what he said in the past. So I'll take it. I'll be happy with that. He was a classmate of Vivek Ramaswamy, and Vivek Ramaswamy wrote this, "So proud of my friend, classmate, and fellow Southwest Ohioan today. We used to watch Bengals games at the bar in law school. It's awesome. We're now here, a decade later, with J.D. joining the strongest presidential ticket in our lifetime. He'll be an outstanding vice president." So that's really cool. All right, any last thing about J.D. Vance's biography that you read there, honey, that you want to share with us? Something that we missed? Anything?
Well, just to reiterate, I really think he's one of these people that is kind of a self-made success story. He has seen many sides of the coin. He's seen people that are hopeless, and he's seen people that, you know what, I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and I'm going to make a success out of myself. To me, he's like a Donald Trump progeny.
Yeah, I think so too.
He's different, but he's also alike him. I don't think he has the wild swag personal life. Will never have it. Gladly or thankfully that President Trump has had in the past, but he's clear on where he stands. You know, whether he articulates it well or not, no one knows where they stand better than President Trump. He knows what he believes. And I think that J.D. Vance may very well turn out to be the same kind of person. I think his experiences of his life are priceless for us, because many of us will never know what it's like to grow up poor. Many of us will never know what it's like to go to Yale Law School. Many of us will never know what it's like to serve in the U.S. Marine Corps in a combat situation. These are things that are invaluable, and I think the whole tenor of things right now is bringing the country together, unity, whether people mean it or not on the other side. I think that J.D. Vance is the kind of person that can help unite people, because he can relate to people.
I think so, too. All right, well, so that's a great primer. That's a shot across the bow about who the vice president is, J.D. Vance, vice presidential candidate, J.D. Vance. And I just wanted to make sure we share with that with you. We have a couple of, before we say goodbye to you today, there are a couple of clips that I want to play for you. They're really good. You can't leave us yet. They're pushing back on the media in very clever ways. And so we're going to play that when we return right after this.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, abortion has remained the world's leading cause of death for the fifth consecutive year in 2023, despite the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And tragically, this total is greater than the number of deaths attributed to the next seven causes of death combined. And sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of abortions, babies' lives are at an even greater risk now. Well, I think we are working on getting leadership that values life. I think both President Trump and J.D. Vance do. Their natural inclination is to be in favor of saving babies, and I'm grateful for that. But that alone's not going to save them. I think that's where preborn comes in, because the ultrasound, besides pastors preaching in the pews, I can't think of anything more important than actually seeing your baby for the first time while it's in your stomach and in your womb. It's pretty dramatic. I remember seeing it myself, and most women do choose life. So if you would like to help preborn provide those ultrasounds, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you with my sweetheart, Bruce. All right, so we saw some really funny things last night that I thought I might share with you. Don Jr. was on fire. He was interviewed by MSNBC. I don't think he knew it was MSNBC, but during the course of the conversation, he figured it out, and here it is, clip 8.
What is that change going to look like, Don? What practically, your father as president, I think you would even say, was a divisive figure. What's it going to look like in the second term?
I don't think he was a divisive figure at all. I think the media created divisiveness around him. They lied about Russia collusion. They said he was a traitor. They went after him in every which way as possible. If the media actually starts being an honest broker, talking about the things that he did, the prosperity he brought, the peace deals that he signed around the world, rather than the disaster that we're living right now, I think you'd do everyone in the country a big favor.
I know immigration's important to him. I covered the family separation crisis closely. Will we continue to see policies like separating 5,000 children deliberately from their parents?
You mean the Obama administration?
You know they didn't do that, sir.
Okay. Sure.
Will there be a second family separation policy?
It's MSDNC, so I expect nothing less from you clowns. Even today, even 48 hours later, you couldn't wait. You couldn't wait with your lies and with your nonsense. So just get out of here.
Well, the separation policy was the Obama administration, and they slapped that onto Donald Trump, and it wasn't true, separating, putting kids in cages. That was during the Obama administration. That's why Don Jr. is so angry. Get out of here. That's good. They got so much spunk, those boys, don't they? They remind me of their dad.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. They have picked up so many of the good traits of their dad, you know, about no nonsense.
Yeah.
And calling it for what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so here's another one. Now, I spent a good deal of time yesterday saying to all of you that the media is trying now to pivot to tapping all of us down, making moral equivalents. Like the things that Donald Trump have said are the equivalent to Joe Biden and to media calling him Hitler. Is going to destroy democracy. He's a convicted felon. He's a whatever, fill in the blanks. And so they want to put moral equivalence to their threats. I think of Maxine Waters threatening that she'd go out and finish Trump off herself. I played a whole clip yesterday, which we could replay, but you know that that's been happening. The language is not the same on both sides. And yet they want to make a moral equivalency, like we are all guilty of the same thing. We have not incited violence. And as far as I can tell, Democrats have not been killed or attacked like they have been in the streets by Antifa and Black Lives Matter. The Republicans were practicing at the baseball field for the congressional baseball game when a Bernie Sanders supporter tries to murder them and nearly kills Steve Scalise. Now, I don't think we have a history of that. And yet they want to say January 6th is the same. They wanted to say that Gretchen Whitmer's attempted kidnap, which was a whole total sham, a thing that was actually manufactured by the FBI itself. That's the kind of thing they're accusing us of, because they want us to shut up. Okay, so the reason I'm telling you all that is at Staten Island yesterday, there was a press conference by one of the Republican leaders in Staten Island. And he was challenged, you know, about this, you guys, you do the same thing. And this was his reaction.
A registered Republican. Yeah. Yeah. You guys know about that?
Yeah. So I don't know who you are, so I'd just like to, before I answer your question, what's your name?
Daniel.
Daniel, from where?
From NBC.
And sir, where are you from?
N.J. Burkett with Chelsea.
Okay. So you want to talk about the guy, the fact the guy may be in a Republican, or at least registered the Republican Party, which anybody in this country is free to do.
I didn't ask that question, by the way.
That's fine, but you did suggest, and you're talking about rhetoric. So are you saying that it's not okay for us to denounce violence? Are you saying that we should wait until we know what's going on? Everybody on the planet knows that you have MSNBC, the New York Times, Rachel Maddow, The View. You have Maxine Waters. Oh, let's get in their faces. You have this going on every day. And you dare to say to us, shouldn't we wait? No, we shouldn't wait. Right now is the time to say that we need to cool things down. We don't have to wait for your permission. We don't have to wait for anybody's permission. Regardless of this young man's motivation, what he did was wrong. He tried to assassinate a president of the United States. And you stand there and say, well, maybe I should wait. Maybe it's okay. Are you saying the fact that he was registered to the Republican Party absolves him of everything, absolves all of the media of all of the coverage they've done for the last 10 years? Absolutely not. That is a pathetic question, and I think you guys should be ashamed. I mean, I don't know you personally, but it's pathetic that you would even suggest that he's a Republican, therefore everything is okay, when you have social media, you have control of the media, you talk about the laptop, you talk about Russian collusion, all of that we have to forget, because maybe this guy was registered or is registered to the Republican Party. You should be ashamed of yourselves.
I don't think what he's saying is that. I think what they're saying is when he says they did it.
Yeah, they did it.
They did it. You don't know that.
It's what I'm saying.
He knows who he is.
It's what I'm saying. Listen, I take all these DEI classes, right? And in the DEI classes, they say that it's not what the question is. It's how the person who perceives the question takes it. That's how I take it.
You may very well do.
Well, okay, so I know that wasn't necessarily clear. They were saying, basically, you shouldn't talk about the shooting because, well, we don't know yet what his motive was because he was a registered Republican.
Well, yeah, what they're trying to do is say that because the shooter of Trump was a quote-unquote registered Republican, that offsets all of the things that have been said by the Democratic media, by the Democrats themselves, that because he's a Republican, this now nothing the Dems did matters anymore. It's all offset.
Well, and then I love the ending when it says, I take classes in DEI as diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it says, you know, it's not the question, it's how you perceive the question. So I'm perceiving your question. I loved it because he got him back.
I do too. He turned all their ideology on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how our people need to respond.
Yes.
We have been kicked in the teeth by the media and let them bully. You know, they love to talk about bullying. They're some of the biggest bullies on the planet.
Well, that's why I loved it when he said, we don't need your permission. We don't need your permission to say this or to feel this way.
And you know, Donald Trump sort of taught us the way to, and so did Ronald Reagan, of how to respond to the press. And that is, you know, you can listen to their question, but when you see that their question is a total setup and it's not based on fact, instead of answering that question, you turn it on them.
Yes, and I think this applies to neighbors and friends, too. We don't have to get in arguments, but don't you can defend yourself. You think you've heard me say for many years now, stop worrying about being nice. Yeah. That isn't about God. That's not about a fruit of the Spirit. That's about your own reputation. Stop worrying about your own reputation. Just do what's right. Say what's right. You can say it in a way that's like this guy actually was very respectful to these reporters. I want to correct one thing, because if you have not been listening carefully, yes, the shooter was a registered Republican from Pennsylvania. We believe because he did also, out of the other side of his brain, donate to Act Blue, which is a far left off the cliff funding for far left off the cliff candidates. That he probably registered so he could vote in the primary. That's what a lot of Democrats were instructing their people to do. So that's what we think happened there.
And skew the results of the Republican election.
Right. So that's what we think. Oh, we don't know yet. But, I mean, it's amazing, Bruce, when they keep saying, we don't have a motive. We just are not sure. It's like when the shooters, remember when that shooter at Fort Hood stood up on the desk and was shooting these soldiers who were unarmed, and he was yelling, Allahu Akbar, which is what all Islamists who are say when they kill infidels. And the press and the FBI, well, we don't have a motive. We can't distinguish a motive. This guy came to shoot the president of the United States. There weren't other people standing around him. It's just foolishness, and it's enough. That's all I can say, just enough. And don't hesitate to defend with the truth and speak up boldly. Just don't hesitate to do that. That's what it's going to take for us. I mean, it's with God's help, the truth and love. And love doesn't mean, you don't mind if I... That's not love. That's timidity. You can speak the truth in love. I mean, when Jesus was driving the money changers out of the temple, that was a loving act, actually, because he was trying to get their attention. Stop this. That was a loving thing. They could not continue like that. And for their own hearts and minds, it was wrong. So, okay, I think I'm out of rage this morning. honey, I thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for letting me be with you, because I'll tell you, I think, look, the proof will be in the pudding with J.D. Vance, but let's just say the ingredients are there to have a wonderful outcome. And, you know, it encourages me that you look at so many young Republicans, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Ron DeSantis, and now J.D. Vance. We have some really solid people that, you know, are both Christian and conservative and are bold.
And bold, yeah. Truth and love, but not meekness. Not meek. I don't want to use the word meek. Meek doesn't mean what it means now. Scriptural meek means strength under control. You could blast them, but you withhold it. That's meekness in the biblical sense. So anyway, all right. So enough. I've said enough, and I hope that you're encouraged. The bottom line is, friends, God is really at work. He truly is. I have to confess to you that I had given up on this whole thing. I really had. I just felt like it was hopeless, that our country was just plunging toward or hurtling toward destruction. And it's still, we still have, you know, hundreds of thousands of Chinese military men in this country. We have jihadis. All of that is still true. We have enemies at our gate and enemies within. But I see God working, and that makes my heart beat fast. So let's just see what he's going to do next with our help, okay? Well, I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan, by the way, lets you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. And remember, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find the podcast on any podcast platform. You can go to sandyreels.com and listen. All of those are possibilities. So I hope you were encouraged by today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.